Hey guys, Mark Wahlberg here. You've heard me say it before, but I'm going to say it again. You guys have to check out Hallow. This Lent, we are doing something really powerful. It's a 40-day prayer challenge for every day of Lent with Jonathan Rumi, Father Mike Schmitz, and of course, yours truly. We are going through the incredible book, The Way by St. Jose Maria Escriva, and I, along with my buddy Chris Pratt, will lead us through weekly fasting challenges. Join me and millions of others around the world praying every day this Lent. Stay prayed up, and God bless you.
When you get the Planet Fitness Black Card, you can bring a friend anytime you work out. And now, through March 13th, get your first month free when you join. You heard that right. Conquer the stair climber with your partner in climb. Enjoy a post-workout recovery session in the hydro massage. And do it all again with access to any of our 2,700 convenient locations. So, you coming? Get your first month free and all the perks with the PF Black Card for just $1 down, $24.99 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends March 13th. See club for details.
Within football, we have silos.
We're going to talk about hiring the man first, the coach second. I think he is an unbelievable person.
Every single person in this locker room right now is playing professional football.
Aaron get COVID, and that week, they're like, yeah, you starting. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Just here to tell you, Pack is back.
What's up, guys? This is Jeff Giannis.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Poor Man's Packers Podcast, from one Packers podcast in the state of our minds. I am Spencer, joined this week with Billy and Todd. Boys,
hello.
Greetings, gentlemen.
And welcome to the offseason. We are back. It has been almost 2 months, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 4 weeks. I don't know how long it's been, but we are back. We're in deep in the, I think I said this before, the balls deep in the offseason. It is... Really? The last 2 weeks have been incredibly boring. I guess everything before the combine, but I'm not much of a combine guy myself. But here we are. Are you guys enjoying this very exciting offseason?
I'm enjoying a semi-quiet offseason.
I think we talked about it last year. I'm just glad that we don't have to worry about any offseason drama this year.
True. And I mean, we'll probably touch on it when we're going to have our little free agency preview. We'll just run through the roster quick, and then we're going to talk about a couple of the other little headlines that occurred over the offseason here. Some Mark Murphy shit-talking, of course, because it's this podcast, and I am who I am. Some of the coaching staff changes, some other shit around. Mason Crosby retiring. Very, very important stuff. But, yeah. The free agency period is coming up. Where was I going with this? Brandon McManus. You're talking about drama, not having to worry about stuff. I am just so glad we signed Brandon McManus. He's obviously got some skeletons in his closet or flight attendants, whatever. But it's nice to not have to worry about the kicker position. At least the last 2 years going into the season, we had rookie kickers. And now, if nothing else, like... it's not going to suck until it sucks. So, hey, I'm glad we're going into the rest of the season not having to worry about something stupid like kicker.
I mean, was that the biggest question going into our offseason is, are we going to re-sign Brandon McManus?
As far as our free agents.
At least in free agency.
You think so?
For sure.
Oh, yeah, in free agency.
I mean, TJ Slayton.
I was thinking Jair, but not free agency.
Sure, and that seems kind of like a done deal at this point, but... I mean, anything else? How do you guys feel? We haven't talked since the Super Bowl. Maybe we could just start off right there. Do you guys feel better about this team now that we seemingly put up one of the best fights against the Eagles? I mean, the fourth quarter, going into the fourth quarter, it was, 16-10, I think? We were only down 6 points. Maybe we weren't as bad last year as we thought we were. Was there any glimmer or, maybe watching the Super Bowl made you feel a little better about the team after it ended in such kind of a shitty way?
I don't think I felt any better about the team watching other teams face the Eagles down the stretch. I just felt like, maybe it was like a better matchup for us, or just the simple fact that like the Eagles could have had a not so great game. Like that was my takeaway. Just watching the Packers in the playoffs and at the end of the season, they just don't pass the eye test. Or didn't. Sorry. New season.
I was going to say, I don't think I feel any differently about this team. It was also 16-3 at the end of the third quarter, for what it's worth.
At one point in the fourth quarter, we were down 6 points.
Sure. Okay, fine. But looking back, I never really felt like we were going to really challenge to win that game. Like, there were just too many mistakes. I mean, the refs didn't help us with that kickoff fumble on the first play of the game. But
game shouldn't count?
It just, I don't know. Every game in the NFL is about matchups. Maybe we were a little bit better matchup for, against the Eagles than the Chiefs were. And the Chiefs also, or the Eagles rather, had 2 weeks to prepare for Patrick Mahomes and come up with a plan to stop him, and they did.
True. Yeah, yeah, they did. Yeah, and it was a shitty game. The halftime show wasn't great. The announcers, I didn't think, were very good. It was all kind of a...
I liked the halftime show.
I mean, it was fine for a music act, but for a halftime show, it wasn't much of a show, I would say. I mean, I'm a much bigger Kendrick Lamar fan than I am Usher, but Usher had such a better halftime performance than what Kendrick Lamar had.
I liked it. It was fun.
You were more entertained, you would say, Spencer.
Yes, and plus he brought up like a bunch of other people, and Kendrick Lamar really didn't. He had like Serena Williams go up and dance or whatever.
A lot of people don't know that was Serena Williams crip walking.
Yes. Yeah, see, we're cultured here. All right, should we get into shit that actually matters now with the Packers?
Yes, you're definitely talking about things way outside of my wheelhouse right now.
All right, so we are going to look at the roster here briefly. We're just going to go down what I kind of think is the biggest need, or we'll see how it, you know, how we're looking at it here. Like, I have biggest need as receiver. You know, I don't think that's, it's not exactly we need a bunch of them. It's like we just need that number one. But either way, we'll start going through the roster here, position groups, and we're going to pay, trade, or wait for draft day. Okay, so basically, I'm not super up to date on all the draft prospects at this point. You know, I'm a little familiar. I've seen a bunch of mocks. I've listened to a bunch of different podcasts and YouTube shit. And you kind of get a feel of where this draft is deep and where it isn't. And then we also kind of know who might be available in trade and free agency. And since we don't know exactly who we're or what needs we're going to have going into the draft, figure right now we can just pay, trade, or wait for draft day and see how we should attack each of these positions. All right, you ready? Makes sense? Clear as mud?
Yep, got it.
Cool. Okay. Packers have $46 million in cap space, which is like top 10. I think we're like 10th in the league. Not super important, whatever. It's all fake money. Anyways, we do only have 7 draft picks, which is pretty low for Goody. We usually seem to go into most drafts with double-digit picks. But I feel like it's a good year for us to not have, I mean, it's not good to not have a ton of draft picks, but it really is. I feel like we are a very deep roster. It's just the top end talent is more what we're kind of hurting for the most part. So kicking things off, as I alluded to, top need that I would say, at least for the success for the team next year, receiver. So obviously the Packers currently have Jaden Reed, Dontayvion Wicks, Romeo Doubs, and injured Christian Watson, Bo Melton, and Malik Heath. It sure seems like we need a number one. Again, it's just the way I'm looking at it, and we'll talk about it here, but it's like I feel pretty good about all the depth pieces. You know, Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson are entering a contract year here, so you got to think about that going forward. So I guess, Todd, why don't we start with you? Obviously, there's a bunch of names out there, but what would you want to do with the wide receiver position this offseason?
So pay is free agency, right?
Yeah, very good.
I think pay. I don't know. Okay. The more like we think about, the more I sit here and I think about, I see like the tweets about Devontae. I'm like, I think I was against it at one point, but now I'm like, I don't know. Let's just bring him back. If anything, there's at least somebody in that wide receiver room that can catch.
True, very true. Billy, what do you think?
Can I say pay and then draft day as well? Like, it feels to me that we need to double dip. I think we need either two on draft day, preferably, I'm with you, Todd, I'd like to have Devontae Adams, and then double that up in the draft with another young receiver, maybe day two even. I don't have any idea what the wide receiver board looks like, but like you said, Spencer, with Doubs and Watson entering contract years, it feels like we need to start to replenish some of that depth.
Yeah, and this is just a fantastic start to this little segment here, because I have the exact same take as both of you guys as well. I would say I think we need to make some type of splash in free agency or a trade. Obviously, the big talking point this week and last week has been the DK Metcalf talk. Today, it came out that DK did request a trade. Last week, there was a blogger boy for the Seahawks, the Locked On Seahawks podcast, who said, of course, that the Packers and Seahawks were in talks to trade for DK Metcalf, waited for the engagement to go up and for it to trend on Twitter, and then he followed up saying that it would have to be a first-round pick, a player, and then another draft pick. So it just showed you that it was a lot of bullshit. Obviously, I mean, like today he tweeted, he was like, I got a lot of crap this past week for what I said last week, and people didn't like my reporting. They're getting on me. It's like, you can still lie. A lot of people have, going into the offseason, a lot of Seahawks fans and, like, the beat knew that DK could possibly be traded. And now that seems like a high probability here. He's in the last year of his contract. It would cost a couple draft picks, or at least one, and then probably a receiver. The thing that keeps, I mean, if we gave him Romeo Doubs and like a third round draft pick, I guess I'd be okay with it. It would almost like I'd
almost need some reassurances that he's going to sign long term, though.
But it wouldn't even be that. It's I more so see that as a negative because they wouldn't trade him, or DK wouldn't want to move unless we assured him that we were going to lock him up long term. And I don't really want to lock him up long term. He's 27 years old. It's estimated that his contract would be like at least $24 million annually. And again, for me, it's just like, if you wouldn't pay Davante Adams that type of money when we were in the same scenario 3 years ago, I don't really want to do it with DK Metcalf, who is a speedster. Or has been. He's a pretty fast guy. I mean, he is a RAS god. That was something that Goody talked about in the postseason presser too, is how when we drafted Elton, they were thinking about taking DK there as well. But he's not a very refined route runner. He's kind of an oddball. I don't think he's a bad egg or anything. But the biggest thing, and I've harped on this for fucking years now, is bringing in a guy like Devontae is getting another coach in your room. Like, he's not a super fast guy, but he is the best route runner in the league. He knows the offense. He knows how to, like, talk. I mean, he was raised by Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb and James Jones, and the guys in our room now haven't really had that type of veteran leadership in that room. So for me, it makes the most sense to sign Davante Adams. You probably only have to give him something like $16-18 million a year. Give him a 2-year contract, and he can be kind of that placeholder guy for these next 2 years when you figure out what you want to do with the big four in Watson, Dobbs, Wicks, and Reed. So it seems like the perfect scenario, but I do wonder if Goody has too much of an ego to bring a guy back in that, I don't know if it was a mistake letting him go, but I don't know if the receiver room got any better after we moved on from him.
Do you think Davante wants to come back?
It does seem like it. I mean, he goes on that Kay Adams show all the time, and he's talked up Jordan Love a ton, and this was even before he had been jumping around like this. So, and again, the thing that keeps popping up, well, I don't know. There's always multiple narratives going on with Devontae, but he wants a gold jacket. He wants to be on a winning team after these last 3 years of not winning many football games. There's still these things with him wanting to go to the West Coast. Wildy's talked about this too, how he's like, he said that's a factor, but he doesn't think that's like a top five thing. Obviously, it would be like money, winning, having a quarterback, you know, a decent offense. At the same time, teams like the Chargers and, I mean, shit, maybe even the Seahawks and who else is in the Rams, those are all pretty decent looking options for Davante too. But, I mean, it just seems like the perfect spot for us right now to sign him, draft a guy in one of the mid rounds or whatever that can sit behind him, and then again just figure out who you want to keep around with the other four big guys on the squad. You know?
I feel you.
Because then the other options in free agency or who's available by trade, I mean, there's T. Higgins who got the franchise tag. That's never really been an option in my mind because he's always been second fiddle, really, and I don't think you go into a game against the Bengals and you're like, oh my God, T. Higgins.
How do we stop T. Higgins?
Right. So it's like, I don't want to give up a draft pick and pay him a long-term deal. There's Chris Godwin.
That seems like Whoever pays for T. Higgins is going to regret it in like 2 years. They're going to be like, man, I can't believe we did that.
Right. He's a great number two, but I don't think he's a number one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him because the Bengals aren't looking good against the cap, and they've already paid Burrow and Chase. So obviously
they've got Hendrickson to pay too.
Right. So it seems especially the second year in a row getting tagged, it seems like a pretty easy move. And I probably brought this up before. Ted Thompson masterclass again. You remember Corey Williams?
Yep.
He was a very solid defensive tackle for the Green Bay Packers. And we tagged him. We gave him the franchise tag. I believe it was still the franchise tag back then. And then we traded him to the Browns for a second round pick. And it's just crazy to see how much the market has changed with these guys. Because, I mean, if the Bengals, I mean, obviously wide receiver is a much more important position and a much more lucrative position too. But the Bengals would probably trade T. Higgins right now for a second round pick. And it's just crazy that Packers were able to do it that with Corey Williams, 15 years ago at this point now. So, I don't know. The other names to bring up, Amari Cooper, I wouldn't hate that. Stephon Diggs, wouldn't like that. DeAndre Hopkins, Hollywood Brown, and these last two, Hollywood Brown and MVS. Again, Christian Watson is going to be out like the majority of the year, it feels like, and we really don't have that speedster outside guy. If you could bring in a Hollywood Brown on a cheaper deal or MVS on a dirt cheap deal and then just fucking cut him once Christian Watson comes back, it's always about taking the top off the defense, and those seem to be the only real two options in this free agency class that can do that.
The MVS one just kind of feels gross, though.
It would be the least exciting. It would be like when we re-signed Devon House after he played with the Jags.
Right. My thought on it is, I want a receiver that has reliable hands that we can go to in the red zone or on third down.
When we need
a catch. Like, Hollywood Brown and MVS are not the kind of guys that you look
catch
to for reliable hands. And we struggled with drops last year. So if we're going to pick up a receiver in free agency, I want somebody with reliable hands. And to me, that's Davante Adams. That's Amari Cooper. And Chris Godwin. And I don't know that Godwin is a fit because Reed plays the slot already for us.
Right. Yeah. So we'll see. And again, the draft, it isn't top heavy like it's been the last couple years. So again, and we're all kind of saying the same thing here. Sign a vet, leaning towards Davante Adams, and then draft someone probably between rounds 2 and 4. Just see what happens there. Next position that I have, and again, I mean, this is all just fucking floating around. Defensive line, on the surface, not bad. We had a pretty solid run D last year, first time in a long while. I mean, we were top 10 defense at just about every metric. And again, not really any weak link. But when you look at the room right now and long term, Kenny Clark declining, pretty crummy year for him last year, unfortunately. After getting that new contract, TJ Slayton is a free agent, but he's really only a run stuffer. Again, that stat that Justice Mosqueda had where the Packers are the run D is a full yard better when he's on the field, but the pass D gives up like an extra 2 yards per play. So it's one of those. You got to know when to use them. Colby Wooden stinks. And then Carl Brooks and Devonta White just haven't been super consistent. So it's one of those where this is probably the last year of Kenny Clark. TJ Slayton's gone. Colby Wooden sucks. It's like we should probably infuse that room with some talent. What do you guys think? I mean, I don't know if you have any guys, in free agency that you'd look for. But again, would you rather pay for someone, trade for someone, or just look at the draft here?
I think for me, I would look at the draft for this one. I don't know what's out there. I have heard that it's D-line is a good one this year. So there's defensive linemen out there, and it would be nice. Like you said, like there's still guys on the roster. So it's not like we need to fill a gap immediately, but like, man, what an underwhelming group aside from, in my opinion, TJ Slayton being like the one guy other than Carl Brooks, but like with, what's his name being hurt on and off all year too.
Wyatt
was hurt on and off all year. It's like the most exciting guy to me, just because the run game was so, it was the opposite of what it usually is, and being successful and like those goal line stops were a lot of fun. I was like, oh, like TJ Slayton was like the exciting guy. And then you bring up how bad the pasty was when he's out there, and it's like, yeah, we just got to get young guys in there that, you know, can, I don't know, maybe it's just a bad fit. This entire group, none of this group has, this group is all drafted at a 3-4.
You know, I mean, the run D was still good.
Run D was good.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good point. It was the pass D, or the pass rush that was really bad.
And I should specify here, too.
You're not talking edge.
Yeah, yeah. Edge is a different position still in most minds, and that's kind of what I'm assuming here.
But, like, with Kenny Clark, how poor, like, he just, kind of thought, like, him being the guy and, like, the 4-3, like, thought he was going to be able to shine, and it's, like, he was invisible. Like, I don't know what, he was gone. It was weird.
So you're separating edge from
yes.
D tackle. Okay. Yep. Well, then that changes my answer. So defensive tackle, I'm with Todd. I think we go find a young guy in the draft. I've seen that Derek Harmon from Oregon mock to us, and I saw that he led the nation, or at least FBS, in quarterback hurries, which was an interesting stat for an interior defensive lineman. So it's like, hey, if we can get somebody that can clog the run and push the pocket a little bit. I mean, I think back to the days when it was, you know, Kenny Clark doing the push into the pocket, and then it was like Dean Lowry that was just a guy standing out there, you know, like if we can get two guys on the interior that have a little bit of push up front, I mean, think about what that interior defensive line could be next year.
This is the one kind of dark horse position, I feel like. Edge is probably kind of the same. But, hey, once again, really good podcasting here. I agree with you guys, too. I would lean draft. Again, like you were saying, Todd, defensive line is a little deeper this year. So it seems like there will be some quality at the back end of the draft where we will be picking. But so there's Milton Williams, the defensive tackle for the Eagles, who, like, I read up, like, he was one of the better players on that defense this year, too. There's Javon Hargrave for the Niners. He's 32 years old. Milton Williams is 26. So Rob Domofsky last week talked about how when he was talking with agents at the Combine, he said multiple guys said that the Packers are going to be big players when it comes to free agency this year. And the one thing that I could see Goody doing, because, again, he doesn't really like admitting when he's wrong on things, and he's talked up, you know, twice, the season-ending presser, and when he talked to the media at the Combine, he talked up Lucas Van Ness. And now, obviously, he's not going to really say negative things about a player unless it's, you know, Aaron Rodgers or something. I don't think he really actually did all that much, actually, in the public. But I could see him, obviously pass rush was something that we were lacking a lot of last year, but if you go in and get and pay up for a guy like Milton Williams, who's one of the better defensive tackles in the league, you know, he's the top guy pretty much going into this free agency period, you get your pass rush there, and then I think you kind of keep edge where it's at, maybe draft a guy. I still think we're going to probably draft a defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman early. But it just, that's the one spot where I'm wondering if we're going to make a splash there. There was talk, too, that guy who re-signed with the Cowboys with the really goofy last name, really fun last name, who re-signed yesterday for like 4 years, $80 million or whatever. That was a name that Rob had brought up as well. So I don't know if we're going to make a splash there. I wouldn't be shocked if it happens. Again, that's the dark horse. But like you guys said, I would use... Right now, that seems like the most likely option in the first round, either that or edge, I would say. But, yeah. Next position, corner. The other big news story, which you kind of hinted at too, Todd, is Jair Alexander. They talked about a little bit, Goody in the presser at the Combine, and then Ian Rappaport did tweet out that they are currently shopping Jair. If we do trade him, I wouldn't anticipate getting much, probably a late round draft pick or whatever. Something that was kind of talked about too was trading for distressed assets, like if we had traded a Jair for one Joey Bosa, but we did just see that Joey Bosa has been released today, so that that won't happen. But obviously that leaves a little bit of a hole at that position, because God, when you look at the cornerback room, this is where you go uh-oh, because it is, we got Carrington Valentine, we got Keyshawn Nixon. You know, we have, why can't I think of the safety who plays in the slot, the rookie from last year?
Bullard,
who's kind of a nickel guy. We got Ballantyne, and then we have Kalen King that people on Twitter love bringing up like he's some fantastic player, even though he was on the practice squad all year. So we're pretty thin there, But Todd, starting off, what would you do? What was it, pay, trade, or draft day?
I think pay. There's a couple guys out there that could maybe be good fits. One, Rasul Douglas is out there. Yeah. How about Charvarius Ward? You like that one a little bit more? I think he's a little bit younger, too. How old is Charvarius Ward?
I'm not sure, but
29.
Carlton Davis, Charvarius Ward, and DJ Reed, kind of the top guys, are all 28 or 29 years old.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think there's plenty of guys that you could buy. Not saying we have to, but I think that, like, that's one position that you can just directly inject. With Jair most likely leaving, getting traded somewhere, if there's not a corner coming back on that end, like, depending on who we're trading with, it's like, hey, inject somebody into that. Like, I do kind of like the Charvarius Ward. I wouldn't hate to see Rasul come back either. I mean, I think that that's, I think it would be interesting. I like Rasul's attitude. Like, that's one thing that I feel like that fits this defense. Where, like, in the past, it was pretty much like him and Jair that had the attitude, right? And now it's like, there's a lot of attitude on that back end. It'd be just kind of fun to watch Rasul. I don't know. And he's probably pretty cheap, right? Rasul's cheap.
I mean, yeah, he's 30. I don't think he's going to be an early signer. He's kind of down the list when you look at the free agents at corner this year.
I'm going to say wait until draft day. I'm just looking at the corner rankings. There's a lot of guys that I think fit kind of in that mid to late first round where we're picking, what are we, 23, I think, in the first round?
I'll nod and agree, but I should have probably double-checked that.
Obviously, Travis Hunter is not going to fall to number 23. Sorry, Packers fans. I've seen Jahdae Brown from Texas that I like. There's Revell Jr. from East Carolina. Johnson from Michigan. He might go before us, but, you know, wacky things happen on draft day, and it seems like there's a lot of corners that can fit. So if teams are moving around and getting their guys, I mean, how many times in the last couple of years have we seen some consensus top 15 pick fall to the Eagles late in the first round and they pick them up? Like, why can't that happen to us this year with a cornerback?
Yeah, and I'm kind of a little surprised you went with that there, Billy. This is where I'm siding with Todd. You know, maybe most years you can sit back and draft a guy and wait, but again, just with these nice drafts that Goody has had the last 3 years, and this being the last one before the 2022 class has to get paid, I think, and if I had to plant my flag in the sand or whatever here, I think we're going to sign one of these corners. Byron Murphy is the guy who pops up too. He's kind of the youngest of this group. The guys I like are Byron Murphy and Paulson Adebo from the Saints. Two guys, maybe Adebo more so, but Byron Murphy was a pretty great player for the Vikings last year. I believe he made the Pro Bowl. I would make the splash there because that's where you pay him, you plant him into the starting lineup. You don't have to worry about the draft position because it's this year and next year where I think we, again, have the best shot of making a run for a Super Bowl. So I would rather take the more likely guaranteed in a decent player here. But again, I wouldn't be shocked if we do still draft a corner early as well, just because of how deep that position looks this year.
My other thought with the free agency class for corners is it looks deep too. There's a lot of, you know, fairly big names. I mean, Todd, you mentioned Rasul Douglas. He's number 11 on the list according to NFL.com. So in my mind, it's almost, why not grab a corner in the first round and then post draft go find somebody off the scrap heap that can come in and be a depth piece.
The other, because in a vacuum, yes, Billy, like that's a good point. But our first round corners outside of Jair Alexander have been really, really bad. In fact, even just the first two rounds, I think for the most part, because Jair and Casey Hayward are probably the only real good guys, because then it's Quentin Rollins.
Casey Hayward was a third or fourth round pick, I think.
I think it was a second round pick. I could be wrong, but I think it was a second round pick. But Quentin Rollins, Demaryius Randall, Josh Jackson, you know, there's been more misses. Amon Carroll, if you want to go that far back. Oof. And I just think, again, there's so much depth, and with the cap space we have, I'd be fine for paying up for one of these more elite corners. It's also weird how the league just changes. You know, like a year or two ago, it was like, oh, inside linebacker and running back isn't that important. And now it's like because of Saquon and Josh Jacobs and Derrick Henry, it's like that running back position is a little bit more revitalized and linebackers are kind of getting paid again. When corner and wideout, you know, was kind of that up-and-coming position for getting paid the last 5 years, and that seems to be dipping a little bit because it's odd to see so many quality players that are hitting the free agency here. But I don't know. I guess we will see how it swings out.
Casey Hayward was a second, for what it's worth. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, very rarely, if ever, am I wrong. Offensive line. So Josh Myers most likely leaving. The 6'7", or wherever the fuck he is, center, will be playing for another team next year, if we don't know which one. This is, again, I don't know how much we want to get into this. I'll just start off talking here. So the top, like, centers and interior offensive linemen are Drew Dahlman from the Falcons, Will Fry. Fry is a guard who's coming off a broken leg. I believe he was with the Colts. And then Kevin, I wrote Kittler, but I believe it's Zeitler.
Zeitler.
Kevin Zeitler.
The Wisconsin former, guy.
Yep, I was going to say former Badger. He's 35 years old, but again, I mean, we're going to have to pay Zach Tom tackle money. That was another little interesting thing, was Goody said he's one of the better tackles in the league. He didn't say right tackle. He said tackle. So I wouldn't be shocked if maybe there's some type of shuffling around. Maybe Jordan Morgan and Rashid Walker move to right tackle. Who knows if he actually, you know, pay Zach Tom this offseason. But interior offensive line, I don't know about drafting a guy. I still think Monk might be a player. We still have Sean Ryan. There's a couple interior guys that are okay. I would kind of go, I don't want to say the Jeff Saturday route because he sucked, but Zeitler might be the best move to have him come in, a very veteran player, still a solid player. He's going to be cheaper than a lot of these other options, and then maybe he could learn or help teach or coach up Jacob Monk and whoever else on the interior.
I kind of feel like you just draft somebody. I feel like you can shuffle people around and just pick somebody up in like the third, fourth rounds. I don't know if you double dip at interior, but I mean, maybe you could really late. I don't know. It's just what I just feel like we always find a way, and that room has been so consistent. I just have faith if that's what I guess I here's what I would say. I have faith that that's the direction they decide to go. I wouldn't be worried. That's where I would be. You could, if we got is it Zeitler? Am I saying that right? If we got Zeitler, I would be very happy, right? That's great. I just feel like there's other places I would, like, as I'm thinking about this, there's other places I'd rather spend my money.
Yep.
I would agree. And we've had a ton of success drafting offensive linemen in the middle to late rounds over the years. I mean, going back to Bakhtiari, Zach Tom. So I like Todd, have faith that we can find starting quality offensive linemen and get them coached up. Maybe they're not going to be great this year, but I think we can shuffle the offensive line around enough that it's not going to be a concern. I think really what we need is depth, and I think that was exposed in the Eagles game in the playoffs.
Something else, Mark Tauscher has said this, that as he says, a little birdie's been talking to him in his ear, and I think it's probably James Campen, his old offensive line coach, who is now a scout for the Packers. And Tausch was saying that he thinks that free agent, or he's hinting at signing someone in free agency. And I do agree with you guys that the Packers are really good at, you know, turning gems into these late, from these late round draft picks. But again, you look at these exits we've had in the playoffs, it isn't just last year, because, you know, we had fucking Telford and whoever else go in because Jordan Morgan was hurt. You look at Billy Turner filling in at left tackle or whatever the fuck it was in 2020. And who was the Badger? Who was a one-year stopgap for us? I want to say Wagner or Wager.
Ricky Wagner.
Ricky Wagner. Rick Wagner. Yep. So we had like 2 out of 3 years where the depth was a big reason why we didn't win in the playoffs. I'm fine with drafting a guy, and I'm sure we will because it's Goody and he always takes late-round draft picks. But again, in a year where you're really trying to make a run at the Super Bowl, I'd rather get a veteran offensive lineman that you don't have to worry as much about rather than kind of relying on a draft pick. Because again, it's still, whoever you have playing center, if you don't take one, somebody early who's going to start, they're playing center for pretty much the first time ever. If it's Elgton Jenkins or if it's Sean Ryan or Jacob Monk, who it'll be his first time, you know, being an NFL starter. So I'd rather not have that much of a question mark on the offensive line if you're trying to make a run.
What do you think about, I'm just looking through the list here, there seems like there's a handful of guards out there too. Like, what do you think about the draft or picking up a guard in free agency and then moving Elgton inside or something like that to center, like moving him, you know what I mean? Like, that seems like there's a handful of guys out there, like Mekhi Becton from the Eagles. I mean, dude's a mauler. LaFleur likes to run the ball. You know, wide receiver's kind of a question mark. He put the training wheels on Jordan Love last year. Maybe we just go full run.
But at the same time, I don't know if we want three guards, right? Because Elgton...
That's a fair point, but we have three guards right now, so what's the difference?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I would go out and I would sign a guard rather than rely on Jacob Monk. And it's just, again, I don't... Elgton Jenkins, he had the opportunity last year when Myers missed those one or two games, and he was bad snapping. What was it, like, two out of three or like three plays in a row? He like rolled it to Jordan Love. And if it's not him, then you're talking Sean Ryan, who finally, after 3 years, became a halfway decent starter. And it's like, now you're going to have him learn how to snap and call out protections from that position. That's the other part that's tough here, too, is, and Jordan, if it was up to Jordan Love, Myers would be back because he relies on him so much. Or had relied on him to call out the protections to make his life easier. And then if you're going, obviously Elton's a veteran guy, but he hasn't played from that perspective on the line. And I don't want to throw that variable in again in the season where you're trying to make a good run.
Do we all agree that Josh Myers was the weak link on the offensive line last year?
Yeah.
If that's the case, why not go sign Drew Dolman? If we're going to throw money at an offensive lineman, why do it at a guard? Why not just go get the best center in free agency? He's a year younger than Josh Myers.
Yeah, and again, I wouldn't be shocked by that. It's never sexy when you're paying, you know, north of $10 million for an offensive lineman, but wouldn't be shocking to see that. But again, with a younger guy too, I just wonder how much that'll actually cost.
Hey guys, Mark Wahlberg here. You've heard me say it before, but I'm going to say it again. You guys have to check out Hallow. This Lent, we are doing something really powerful. It's a 40-day prayer challenge for every day of Lent with Jonathan Rumi, Father Mike Schmitz, and of course, yours truly. We are going through the incredible book, The Way by St. Jose Maria Escriva, and I, along with my buddy Chris Pratt, will lead us through weekly fasting challenges. Join me and millions of others around the world praying every day this Lent. Stay prayed up, and God bless you.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Next position, I have edge. Again, we don't technically have edge positions, but whatever, you know what I'm talking about. Obviously, probably the biggest letdown as a group, no one really came to play. Brenton Cox almost might have been the most impressive just because he had no expectations going into the season. But looking at the free agents here, we got Josh Sweat, who's played all 7 years of his NFL career with the Eagles. We have Joey Bosa, who was just released. He's 29 or 28 years old, but he's been injured, I believe, the majority of the back half of his career. Khalil Mack, who apparently he still looked pretty good last year, even though he's 34, 35 years old. And I don't know if you remember that we had talks with the Chargers before, right, to get him. Chase Young, he's another name that keeps popping up. He's this odd player where he was kind of a letdown draft pick, but he's almost gotten better as the years have gone on. Because I think during the trade deadline this year and the previous year, his name got brought up and everyone was like, he's not very good. He's actually halfway decent.
He's got to be a big-time Rascod, right? He looks like he is.
Yes. I mean, he was, the second overall pick, and he's just one of those physical freaks. And then, of course, this is the position, too, that going as soon as the season ended, it was the, ooh, sexy, could we trade for Myles Garrett? Could we trade for Max Crosby? Well, those things look less likely now with the Browns GM coming out and saying they're not going to move him, which does make sense because they're already in cap hell, and that would create more hell for them. Max Crosby just signed a 3-year extension today. And then after that, you're just kind of looking at Micah Parsons, but Jerry Jones has gone out on record multiple times now saying that they're competing for a Super Bowl this year. That's why they gave Dak that big contract. So I don't think they're going to be trading their best defensive player if the GM thinks they're making a run at the Super Bowl.
Did Jerry watch last year?
Of course Jerry thinks they're competing for a Super Bowl. He said that for the last 25 years.
Apparently he thinks Mike McCarthy was the issue and fucking who? Scott, who's their new coach now?
Oh, right. Oh, who is it?
Brian Schottenheimer?
Schottenheimer, that is who it is. I was thinking Scott Peterson, but I think that's the guy who murdered his wife or whatever.
I don't have any idea how you mix those two up, but we'll leave it.
Scott shot his wife in Heimer.
There you go.
Todd, I guess, what would you do? Again, I think Edge. I think there's some players at Edge. The what's his name? Shamir. Who's the Rascod to?
Stewart.
I think you buy here, and I actually really like the idea of, I think Khalil Mack's like 35 years old, but mm-hmm. I still like the idea of grabbing Khalil Mack on like essentially what would be a 1-year deal, but you know, they're never actually 1-year deals. So doing something like that and then also drafting. But if I had to pick one, I'm saying buy here. That edge room was horrible last year. They totally underperformed. Rashawn Gary and Kenny Clark were just missing, right? They're on the side of milk cartons somewhere. Like, it's horrible.
Classic.
And you could just inject anybody in there because it was no pass rush. And, like, that back half would do so much better with just one pass rusher. Like, when you had Bretton Cox and Aaron Mosby in, I would scoot to the edge of my seat. I was like, we might get a sack here. This is exciting. So it's just like anybody, you can inject anybody into that room, and I think they'd have success.
Todd, I think I agree with your approach that I don't want to rely on a young guy to come in and make an immediate impact just because of how bad that room was last year. But I think we trade for somebody. I'm going to say, I mean, I still don't buy that Myles Garrett isn't getting moved. I know that the cap is a challenge, but Spencer, you already said in this podcast, cap money is fake anyway. So we could figure something out. Could you imagine if we brought in Myles Garrett? The other guy that I would be interested in is Trey Hendrickson with Cincinnati. We already talked about how Cincinnati has to try and figure out a way to pay T. Higgins and Trey Hendrickson. They both have 1 year left on their deal, and Hendrickson wants an extension too, and Cincinnati's already in cap hell. I mean, Hendrickson's had 10-plus sacks in 4 of the last 5 years. He hasn't missed more than 2 games in either of those or any of those 5 seasons, so he's durable even though he's 30 years old. I would swing for the fences and go after one of those guys.
I do like that. The thing that I'd push, well, I'll push back maybe, well, pushing and pulling here. Hendrickson, I would think they'd want to keep him around just because, yes, you're right about the salary cap and everything, but their defense was fucking
horrible.
Terrible.
So bad.
So I think you have a bad overhaul, though.
Well, that's exactly it. Is Cincinnati a legitimate Super Bowl contender? Even with Trey Hendrickson.
I mean, they had a good back half of last year. I mean, they pushed for the playoffs, and you have Burrow, which always gives you a chance, I think. So I would, you know, between those guys, I would rather move on from T. Higgins, draft a guy, right, and then keep your best defensive player. I mean, how much worse would they be if you keep not like it fucking matters? I don't think we have to talk about the fucking bagels here. And then the other thing that I would say, talking about Myles Garrett and funny money, it's still the worst contract in NFL history that they gave Deshaun Watson. And it's still something like where if they cut him, it's like $100 million in dead cap or whatever. I will say this. If the Browns are figuring something out, and I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but Watson tore his Achilles tendon last year, you know, out for the year. Well, apparently he tore it again during the season or right after the season was over, and there's been talks that the Browns are going to say he wasn't rehabilitating himself correctly and they're going to go after some of that contract money. Now, if they're able to do that, and I don't know how much lawsuits and shit play into the salary cap and all that bullshit, but if they are moving on from Deshaun Watson and they get some of that money voided, maybe it would be more likely that we could get a Myles Garrett. But again, I just smarter people who have looked at the cap situation for that team, it would just be nearly impossible to put together a roster if you had that much dead cap if you keep Deshaun Watson and you move on from Myles Garrett. I would love it too. And I'm in the same boat with you, Billy, is I don't know what the move would be, but the big splash should be at this edge position. If it's either free agency or if you can make a trade, that's the route that I would go here too. And then again, first three rounds is probably where I'd be taking an edge player. You know, I don't know if JJ is going to stick around, Brenton Cox, but that's another spot too where I wouldn't be shocked if we ended up trading one of those guys if we do get some reliable talent here through the draft or in free agency, either which way.
Can we trade Rashawn even up for Myles Garrett?
Could you imagine? I don't know. It would be fucking A, Rashawn. That's the thing. This could be the last year, depending on if we do. Say we do make a couple big splashes or we hit in the draft and trade or sign a big name. Maybe we do move on from Rashawn Gary after the season. So, I don't know. After that, those are pretty much the biggest positions of need. After that, this is more just glamour bullshit here. So, the three positions on offense, QB, tight end, running back. And I'll just breeze through what I think of these three positions here. I mean, quarterback, I wouldn't do anything unless someone came for Malik Willis and totally blew the doors off with their offer. Sure, move on for him, but the way Jordan Love was banged up multiple times last year, I'd rather just keep him. Tight end, I mean, Tucker Kraft is him. Shout out to him. He got his wife pregnant, so that's cool. Luke Hell Musgrave, yeah. Still don't know if he's a great football player, but I'm willing to find out this year because Tucker Kraft can do anything, everything else. Ben Sims is still fine. I don't know if there's any like free agents out there draft. I don't think this is a very good tight end draft either. And then running back, you know, if someone falls, I'd take a whack there because obviously we like Josh Jacobs. I think we still feel semi-good about Marshawn Lloyd, even though we didn't see much of him, but he's very, very fast. And then the other guys we got in, number 31, Wilson. And the guy from the Dolphins. Oh, man.
Chris Brooks.
I mean, they're fine. They're perfect threes, but you kind of want more of that home run hitter. And this does seem to be a deeper running back class, especially compared to last year when there really wasn't much at all that came out of the draft.
Yeah, I think if you look at where we're at, if we had 11 picks, I would maybe be like, yeah, take a shot on somebody at tight end, take a shot on somebody at running back. But it's like, I don't care if they do anything at those positions and or quarterback, just because it's like, we have guys. I don't feel bad about maybe tight end. Like, you could take a shot at a tight end in the late rounds, would feel, or if you really liked somebody mid, but like, just that capital needs to be spent somewhere else. I don't want to spend that money in free agency. Like, those are not need positions for us at all. So I think, yeah, you just sit around. If somebody falls to you that you really like, take a shot.
Do you remember your seventh round crush from 2 years ago?
Which
the running
one?
Back?
I don't know.
That you said would beat out AJ Dillon.
Oh, which... who?
Kylan Hill?
Lou Nichols. That's right. He was a bowling ball.
That's Billy, right. what
forgot
you
about
got?
Lou.
I'm gonna say running back. You stand pat. I feel good with that group of four. Tight end, maybe you pick up somebody on the scrap heap or some late round flyer in the draft. Either one, I don't really care. The one that I do have a stronger opinion on, and this is just because I have never understood the Sean Clifford pick. I still can't believe that he's even on the practice squad. Sign a quarterback, or not sign a quarterback, sorry. Draft a quarterback in the late rounds with a legitimate NFL arm. Maybe he doesn't have the accuracy. Maybe he's throwing it into the fifth row. But get somebody that can actually throw a 15-yard out instead of Sean Clifford and let him compete in camp. Sean Clifford is also already like 26. So even...
He might be older even.
Even if... And I think I look at it the way you do, Spencer. Like, if something happens with Malik Willis where we trade him or You know, I don't know what his contract situation is. Like, Sean Clifford is not a viable backup in the NFL.
Yeah, I also think it's very funny that you're like, the one position I feel strongly about is third string practice squad quarterback.
I should have clarified, of those three.
Yeah. And I would, I mean, not like this is fine, this is just fucking arguing to argue, but Michael Pratt was kind of supposed to be that guy. He did have an NFL arm. I saw something recently, too. I forgot where he signed with. I don't know if it's the Saints.
Tampa. He was in Tampa.
Wherever he is, but they gave him, like, an extra bump in his contract to this offseason to keep him around. So they must have been impressed enough with that. But I do agree. Sean Clifford is... The benefit of him is that he's very smart and he picks shit up quickly, and I think he's viable in that room. But now when you have Malik Willis, who's been there for a full year, maybe they do see Sean Clifford as someone who's more replaceable at that very important third quarterback, emergency QB, practice squad guy.
I've never understood the argument that Sean Clifford brings a ton of value to that room, because Jordan Love has been in the system longer than Sean Clifford. Sean Clifford is not teaching Jordan Love shit in this offense.
Who knows? You don't know. Maybe he's got a good eye for a thing. Maybe he'll be like Sean Mannion and be a good coach down the line. Looking at the...
Sean Mannion also carved out a 10-plus year career in the NFL, I'm pretty sure.
Well, this is Clifford... He's very young into his career. Maybe he'll be around for a decade. I mean, fucking God, who's the doucher on ESPN? I mean, he's smart.
Orlovsky.
Orlovsky, yeah, like that fucker. Okay, last couple positions here. Safety, inside linebacker, and specialist. News today, too, we did bring back Zane Anderson as a restricted free agent, so that's cool. Again, he was a nice little story last year when our safety and slot position kind of fell apart. He came in and there really wasn't any dip in production, which was nice. So I'm glad to get him back for next to nothing. Isaiah McDuffie is also returning a 2-year, $8 million deal. This is a classic Goody move where not like inside linebacker would be a need, but it's definitely one where you don't need to draft a guy going into this year by bringing back Isaiah McDuffie, the veteran, and then you have the top dogs in Quay and Cooper, obviously. Not the best sign for the guy that we traded Rasul Douglas away for in Hopper, Tyron Hopper. So we'll see there. And again, we talked about specialists, but Brandon McMahon is returning with that 3-year, $15 million deal. Unfortunately, he's going to have to give up number 17 when we signed Devontae. But Todd, you give a shit about any of that stuff.
I mean, I think I'd like to draft a linebacker. I think you can't have too many explosive off-ball linebackers. Maybe somebody that can cover. That'd be nice. Somebody who can put it on third down. I mean, there really isn't anybody on this roster that can really cover on third down.
Cooper can run.
Cooper's the only one, and yeah, he's not a cover guy either.
Like, he had that one play where he like chased down that tight end or whatever. That was very impressive. And I guess if we're playing nickel and we've only got one out there, it's fine. But you're not wrong, especially with Quay getting fooled by anything.
And
Isaiah McDuffie with concrete feet, not cement feet, concrete feet.
Concrete feet. I would say in the passing game, Quay also has concrete feet. He's just so he just doesn't know where to go. And like, I don't know. It seemed like, I mean, you could also bring, we have tons of talent at safety. Maybe a safety plays like that Tampa 2 role. I think teams have done that in the past. Maybe you don't need a cover guy. I have no idea. But it just feels like that would be that'd be fun. Yeah. I like linebackers. They're fun.
Linebacker. Billy?
Assuming Eric Wilson does not re-sign post-draft or something, or... Let me rephrase this. If we are not planning on bringing Eric Wilson back at all, then I think we need to draft a linebacker. That being said, I feel like if we really wanted to, we could get Wilson back after the draft.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, that's where I'm at too. I don't really give a shit about safety unless you find some special teamer, some bullshit like that. So again, I'm pretty fine with all those positions. I don't give too much of a shit. I'd say time for a commercial break, but that's all the options there. We're about 50 minutes in. I don't know how it's going to look like when we're editing this. We, as a team, we will edit this podcast.
I do a lot of it.
So let's just get into other news / take news. I don't really fucking care. First thing we'll talk about, because it is probably more exciting than the other news, Mark Murphy and the Packers. Just a couple little blips to talk about here. We'll start with the minor things, get into the bigger things. One minor thing. It looks like the Packers are going to play the Steelers in Ireland this year. So there's been different reports, like early in the season, week three or week four. In a vacuum, that's fine, but something that Murphy said in his monthly take five or whatever the fuck it is, he said that we should get used to the idea that we'll be playing internationally at least every other year or every year, which again is just fucking repulsive.
Fuck that.
Which is crazy to hear. Another thing, and I keep tweeting like fucking beat reporters, because there was little whispers last year that part of agreeing to go to Brazil this past season meant we wouldn't have international games like for a couple of years. And for the next year to do it again, it's just one of those things where, Mark Murphy, what do you do? Are you acting in the best interest of the Green Bay Packers, or are you acting in the best interest in the NFL? So I don't know. Todd, do you have any thoughts on that?
I thought the same thing. I don't know where I heard it, but I thought that when we went to Brazil, because we had held off for so long going to Europe, whatever, but like, okay, we go to Brazil, okay, we don't have to go for a few years, whatever I don't know, it's unwritten.
And we were in
thing.
London 2 years before that.
And so it's like, why the next year now we go to Ireland? It's like, I don't know. And obviously, I'm assuming, is this a Packers home game or is this a Steelers home game?
I believe it's a Steelers home game.
So less shitty, but still, like, I don't know. Feels like it's not cool.
The thing I don't understand is, first, I don't think we would ever give up a home game to go play overseas, even with the ninth home game. I guess that would be my fear, is that Murphy or whoever looks at it and says, oh, well, we used to get by with eight home games every year anyway, so why not go play a home game in Brazil or something? It'd piss off the fans a whole lot, but it wouldn't shock me if we did that. But all these teams, like, we sell out their stadium when we go play in Pittsburgh. Not that they need help selling out their stadium.
Yeah, Pittsburgh doesn't, but...
But, I mean, we would have sold out the Giants. The Eagles would have been sold out anyway, you know, playing us. Like, I just don't understand the benefit from a financial standpoint from any of these teams to agree to play Green Bay in a game overseas. Like, if you want to play the Browns and the Cardinals overseas, go have at it. I don't give a shit.
The Jaguars. I mean, they might as well. They have homes in Europe, right? Like, they might as well. They're there every year. It's like, don't put us there. That's stupid.
And again, that's the stuff that pisses me off. Now, it's tough to compare anyone to Bob Harlan, but Mark Murphy has not really been close to what Bob Harlan was. Bob Harlan always cared about Green Bay and the Packers. Again, a big battle that he had was keeping the Packers in Green Bay. But other things that he could do is put in requests with the league, like during the schedule coming out and shit. So he would always, like, Thursday games, he would always request for those not to be gold package games, because people would have to drive home from Milwaukee and either, you know, after a game, or they potentially would sell their tickets, which he wouldn't like. He had other requests too. I mean, international games weren't really a thing back then, but you know, he would push back on it. I mean, we did have a preseason game at Japan at one point, but again, and Wilde has said this, where Mark Murphy hasn't put in those types of requests, but he has put in requests to, like, get the draft to Green Bay. Again, like, that's cool. That's cool, I guess. But I care more about, you know, Green Bay and keeping the money in Green Bay, keeping the fans in Green Bay, and all this other shit is more so building up the league than it is building up the brand of the Green Bay Packers. So I just...
Do you have any idea what does the money situation look like when a team loses a home game to go play in Europe? Like, how does the money shake out? Because you're losing concessions, tickets, all that stuff you're losing. So, like, how does that... Obviously, the NFL is throwing money at these teams. So, like, is that the incentive? Like, does Mark Murphy also, like, even if it's an away game, is he also getting... Like, is the Packers organization, like, getting money for this? Like, how does that work?
I don't know the answer, but I would assume their shit's prorated, like, with the concessions, because obviously they wouldn't just be doing it out of the goodness of their heart in London or whatever. But then it's also, like, the added anxiety that comes with having to travel overseas and your equipment staff and all that. Like Rob Domofsky last year talked about how they had to like send their equipment months in advance, like the field goal post and shit, because they didn't have them over there. And it's just, if we have to deal with this shit every year or every other year, it's like, this is fucking stupid. And what's the benefit to the team when that's all going on?
I'm sure that the NFL shares some of the costs, but like the NFL has to pay to use that stadium. I would guess that whoever owns whatever rinky-dink stadium in Brazil we played in keeps like the concession costs and a share of the tickets. It's like, I just don't see how, unless it's one of those terrible teams, like I said, Cleveland or Arizona or Jacksonville, how it makes any financial sense to give up a home game. And I still can't believe that we really think that we're going to build the NFL brand so much that eventually there's going to be a team overseas. Like, yeah, I think it's just ludicrous.
We're going to Chile next. So.
Chile. Chile. Next thing to bring up is the tush push thing. So this popped up like 2 weeks ago, I believe, with the NFL meeting, owners meeting or whatever. And it came out that the Packers put in the request to put an end to the tush push. And I had even forgotten about this because I know in college you can't, but it is legal in the NFL, thus the push, but players can push players to advance with. So that's what they'd be getting rid of. And apparently it was the Packers who put in this request, which one is kind of funny because we actually did pretty well against the tush push because we played the Eagles the last couple of years and we've held up pretty well against it. So that seemed kind of odd. But two, it's just like, why are the Packers putting in this request? And the first thing that I did was get pissed off, because if the Packers are putting in the request, it came from Mark Murphy. And I'm like, this motherfucker is going to be, he's not even going to be in the NFL by the time this rule would, you know, come to pass. So, and then after I was getting all pissed off about that, I heard Wilde say something and then Nagler say something about it. Wilde said, and he said similar things in the past, how Mark Murphy just kind of does what Roger Goodell wants him to do for the most part, because he can't get other owners to say things. So if there's requests to be put through, Mark Murphy is kind of the guy who does it. Now, the other thing, what Nagler said, and maybe he's kind of a Murphy guy, he does always give Murphy the benefit of the doubt, which, whatever. He said that it wasn't Mark Murphy who put in the request. It was someone else with the Packers. And I don't even think it was Ed Policy. I think he was hinting at someone else within the organization. But again, it's like, it's back to what I keep bitching about with this fucking team and the way it's managed under Mark Murphy. We're the fucking Green Bay Packers, and we're different than any other franchise in the league. Why do we have to carry the league's water? Why can't some other fucking owner, like the guy for the Giants who's a douchebag, old guy who doesn't like any fun in the league and doesn't want anyone to celebrate and doesn't want any fucking after play extracurricular bullshit or fights, whatever. It's like, do you really need to have the Packers be your puppet for things you want to get across? Because that's what multiple guys made it sound like is happening here.
I have a handful of thoughts, so don't let me forget to put them up your fingers. I had a couple to talk about. One, if you're carrying the water for Roger Goodell, that's the lamest thing anybody could ever do. And like,
but he got the draft. True, he got the draft in Green Bay.
That's super lame. Like, you have to have no balls to carry Roger Goodell's water. Two, what was the other thing? I literally forgot it already.
Okay. I was hoping that would happen. I have so many things to say. Oh, two.
What else did you say? Just really refresh my mind. Roger, he carries the water for Roger Goodell.
It might not have been Mark Murphy who actually said it.
If it wasn't Mark Murphy, everything goes through the president. There isn't a memo that goes to the NFL that isn't, it's Mark Murphy.
Roger Goodell is not sending an email to some staffer in Green Bay saying, hey, put in this request to ban the tush push because Mark won't do it.
And likewise, the Packers aren't sending a memo to the NFL that doesn't go through Mark Murphy. That was the dumbest. Oh yeah, somebody in personnel did it. We don't know who it was.
That's also stupid. Either way, he got some stamp of approval on it.
I had something else, but I forgot. So
my first thought on this, Todd, like you, I have a couple of thoughts. My first thought is the fact that Mark Murphy has to carry the water of the NFL is ridiculous. Like, if anybody should be carrying the water of the NFL, it's one of those poor, I'm going to say this in with air quotes, poorer, I should say less rich, lesser known, less powerful owners in the league. Okay, so I'm not talking to Jerry Jones, a John Mara, the Rooneys in Pittsburgh. I'm talking about, you know, the schmuck in Houston. Like, that owner does not carry a lot of weight. Like, have him McNair. be the sacrificial lamb to put this request in. My second thought on it is, do we know how the request was worded? was it to just get thou shall not push the quarterback and that's the end of it? Or was it get rid of all aiding the runner? Because the NFL used to outlaw aiding the runner. And that's why with the sneak in the ice bowl, Chuck Mersin has his arms raised in the air because he's showing the NFL, I did not aid the runner. So if the request by the Packers was to get rid of aiding the runner, I would be more on board with it. I'm not saying I would be, but if it was just get rid of this play that the Eagles run, that's Bush League weak shit.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. Oh, you got another one, Todd?
I remembered my third point. So did you guys see that? I think it was Mark Schlereth was talking about how, like, in 2013, it was a special teams play. But remember, they used to, like, push one person through the field goal block. So on field goal block, they would, like, push somebody. Right? You remember that? And they outlawed it because it was a safety thing.
Mm-hmm.
So his point was that this you could argue that this is also a safety issue and you can't do that.
I don't think the stats show that it's any more dangerous than any other play, though, does it?
So here's my point. We should flip it around. We should bring back pushing people. Like, you can push defenders and special teams players everywhere because they're kicking way too many field goals. They're too good at it. We need to make it harder to kick field goals. You should be able to do the Troy Polamalu, get the jump over the center. Like, we should be able to do all of that. Bring that back. Let's do something fun for once.
That play was sick. I mean, that was a sweet
amazing
play.
I like the juxtaposition of Billy saying something smart where it's like, well, if you're going to outlaw it everywhere, you can't push any player forward at all. And Todd, you're like, well, what if we give it the power back to the
defense?
Let's
just push everybody around.
I like that.
Defense and special teams needs a win. Let's start blocking some field goals.
Then maybe we should bring TJ Slayton back. Could you imagine that? Him and fucking Wyatt just pushing. Like, why pushing TJ forward and stuff? Or you could get Isaiah McDuffie just doing it because he's probably not doing it. Well, he's a good run. Whatever.
Just put, like, Kenny Clark, Wyatt, Carl. We'll put Carl Brooks in the front. He's getting pushed because he's got a 12-foot wingspan.
Put Carl Brooks in the back. He pushes Slayton, and then he jumps up and blocks the pass or a field goal if they fake it because that's what he's
You should be
bad.
Able to jump off someone, too. I'm for it.
Last thing
just,
to talk.
Just boost him up with, have two guys like throw him up in the air like he's a cheerleader.
That might be a little tough with those.
I was thinking you jump off the snapper. You can jump on the long snapper's back. Just put some cleats. Make sure you're wearing metal ones and just jump right on his back.
Last thing to talk about Mark Murphy. And God, I thought this was the one we'd talk more about and maybe we won't. But they announced last Friday, as the Packers do, like they did with their agreement with the city of Green Bay when they're trying to talk about paying for shit with Lambeau Field, blah, blah, blah. The Friday news dump. So last Friday, the Packers announced that they would be raising ticket prices again, which isn't super surprising. However, guess what? I don't like it. So they raised ticket prices between $7 and $21, depending on where your seats are. For comparison, last year, the price adjustment was $4 to $10. So again, it's like they doubled what they marked up these tickets. Same exact fucking seats, you know, twice as much of a addition to the price that you're paying. Since 2005, the Packers have chosen not to raise ticket prices only four times. 2006, 2008, 2009, and then we win the Super Bowl, and we have raised ticket prices every single year besides 2021, which was the year after a global pandemic. I don't know if you remember that. Everything was a little weird back then, weirder than it is now. So, pretty bad. They also announced with this news dump that ticket holders that sell, and this is, you know, we saw a lot of Honolulu Blue with the home Lions game last year, but they announced that season ticket holders that sell 100% of their tickets will not be allowed to renew their tickets the previous year, which is great, right? We all agree with that. However, the sleazy part about it is that the Packers have been doing it for the last 4 years, but they didn't announce it until now because of the backlash that they got last year for that Thursday or Monday night football game, whatever it was. Once again, the Packers controlling the narrative. So, and then again, if you look at this, and this is someone who tweeted this out, and if you just do the math, you can see that it's true. If you have two season tickets between the 20s, which are the most expensive tickets at Lambeau, it would cost you $350 total for two tickets last year. This year, it will be $392, and that's for one game. You know, it's $42 more times eight. That's a, do that math in your head, and you get, you know, I know everyone has it in their head right now, but that's a lot of money for a single season. And it's, again, pushing out. You always talk about, you know, we're fucking owned by Green Bay. We're owned by the fans. Well, it's getting to the point where you're not going to have normal schmucks like us going to these games if you got to fucking essentially buy a car every year to go to your fucking season tickets. Or maybe in, you know, this is what I thought of too, maybe it's just inflation. You know, everyone loves inflation, and maybe this is just reflecting that. So if you spent, again, and this is tickets in the 20s, right now, just going up, it would be $192 for a single ticket if your seat is between the 20s. With inflation, since the prices started going up, it should be $115. So again, it shows you how big of a difference this is and how much we're raising prices. Now, I don't know exactly where we are as far as the league rate. Jason Wilby said that we're right in the middle, I believe. So, okay, Billy, let's see. Why don't you kick us off on this one? Should I not be as pissed off as I am about this stupid shit and Mark Murphy gouging the fans, even though he tries to pretend like he loves them?
I'm going to say yes and no.
Exciting.
So, first, and this was the best I could do with the research I could find. So I found an article in the Dallas-Fort Worth Telegram, and they were citing a study done by financebuzz.com, which sounds like a totally legit website, but again, best I could find. So they looked at NFL ticket price, average price data to attend a game in the NFL between 2013 and 2023. And so price to attend included a ticket, a beer, a hot dog, and a parking pass. So back in 2013, the average price to attend a Packers game with those four items was $116 a piece, which was ninth in the NFL. The NFL average was $109, so we were just above NFL average. 2023, the average Packers price had risen to $176, which is now fourth in the league, or was fourth in the league back in 2023, behind the Eagles, the Raiders, and the 49ers. The NFL average was $152, so we were now above that. That for Green Bay represented a 52% increase, which was tied for 11th in the league. So it was a little bit above league average. Now, the rate of national inflation in those 10 years was 31%. Our 52% increase was far outpacing inflation. The way that I look at it, though, is out of the teams that are above Green Bay that had higher increases in the last 10 years, you look at some of them, the Vikings also had a 52% increase. The Jags had a 53% increase. Ugh. The Panthers had a 69% increase.
Ugh.
The Browns had a 93% increase. The Raiders had a 108% increase, which you could write off to the new stadium, but it's like Green Bay in that stretch had 7 playoff appearances. Of the teams that had higher increases in that 10 years, only Kansas City has more playoff appearances. So I look at it and it's like, I would rather pay more money to see the Packers because we're good. And that's how Mark Murphy is justifying it, is because the Packers are good. People want to come see them. There's more demand, so he's going to increase the price. the way I look at it is, if he's going to increase prices, at least we're getting a good product out of it. How do you think Browns fans feel paying almost twice as much as they did 10 years ago, and they're watching a franchise that has one playoff win in that span?
They were just as good as they were 10 years ago right now, though. So it's like, it's kind of the same thing.
I guess it's a fair point, but I'm like, but I don't want to be comparable to the Browns, the Panthers, the Raiders, all those shitty teams. I understand what you're saying, but it's like, that's also the excuse that I hate is, well, the rest of the NFL is doing it. I'm like, well, we shouldn't be like the rest of the NFL.
Well, my point is, the prices have increased for every team in the NFL.
Yes.
During that time. Okay. Not all of them have outpaced inflation. I will give you that. However, my point is, if they're going to increase ticket prices, it's because we're good. I would much rather him do this rather than we miss the playoffs 6 years in a row and he still increases ticket prices. And maybe he would do that anyway. I don't know.
He would never.
Todd, do you have any thoughts on this? Inflation?
Yeah. Can I give a breakdown on how inflation works?
Oh, everyone would love that.
No, I don't have any.
Murphy's printing Lambo bucks.
I think that he can, it doesn't, to the fans, it doesn't matter if they go up 20, 30, 40, 50 bucks. People complain. People will still show up. I think that the real win here is getting rid of the people that have season tickets and sell them 100% of the time. I think that's a huge win, and we should investigate further. You know, we should go to their houses. We should see, are you really the person that's going? But also, how cool would it be if we could actually sell, if you could like give a credit to them to sell tickets to another Packer fan, which is impossible to figure out. It'll never happen. But like, wouldn't that be cool?
Well, we talked about selling tickets last year.
I know, but like, it's impossible to do. You can't do it.
They could make their own website.
But somebody would just be like, we'll just go to the Packer fan website and buy the tickets.
No way.
You'd have to send in pictures.
You'd have to have interviews.
Right. That's what you'd have to do, is be like, prove to me, like, I need a blood oath that you are a Packers fan, right? Anyways, I think that is the win in all of this, is that people who have sold their tickets for 3 years in a row, never been to a Packers game, those people don't get tickets anymore. That's a win.
Sure. And I agree with that. I think everyone agrees with that. I don't like the way that they spun it, like it's a new thing with what was going on this year. But it's like, this is what I would ask, and this isn't even much of an ask. If you like it, you can't raise ticket prices 3 years in a row. Like, it should be something as easy as that. But when you have raised ticket prices 15 out of 16 years, that's fucking nuts. And I don't care what's going on in the league. That is just ridiculous. Other teams haven't had it go up this much over that same amount of time, whatever, or at least consistently every single year, whatever. I hate it. We're the Packers. We shouldn't be doing that. We shouldn't be making it tougher for our own fans to go to games.
Okay, I'm going to push that back on that point. Okay. Look, the point of the Packers is to make money, okay? Look, the Packers do not have a Jerry Jones. They do not have a Rooney or a Mara or Clark Hunt to pump money into the stadium, into the facilities, and into the coaches. We need to make money in order to put our money into the facilities and help field a competitive team. We only get so much money from the NFL every year in revenue sharing. That is not enough money to upkeep Lambeau Field, do all the improvements that we have done, to do all the upgrades to the Don Hutson Center, to do the Titletown District and make Lambeau Field and Green Bay a year-round destination. And that's why Bob Harlan did the renovation in the first place, is he realized that nobody was coming to Green Bay except for those 8 Sundays during the regular season and 2 during the preseason. And he realized that they were not going to be financially solvent within the next 5 years. And so I know that I respect Bob Harlan as much as the next guy, but we need to recognize that Bob Harlan, just as much as Mark Murphy has, realized that the NFL is a business. It's about making money, and it's about keeping the Packers competitive. And the Packers are not going to be competitive unless they're making money. Mark Murphy has just gone beyond that with the renovations of Lambeau and the Titletown District. Now, I agree that he has gone beyond. I will also push back. I don't know that it's appropriate that the Packers went and bought out a bunch of single-family homes west of the stadium to go build this vanity project. But raising ticket prices is part of keeping the Packers competitive financially.
I'm fine with raising prices, thing, though, but don't do it as much as you have.
The fundraising couldn't be easier in Green Bay, though.
That's the thing.
You literally just fire up the printer and say we're going
to
sell.
You have to get an approval from the NFL to do a stock sale, and there is zero chance they would let the Packers do that every year or every 2 years or 5 years.
Well, for how much Mark Murphy is spending time on his knees with old Roger Goodell, you would think that he could allow it. I mean, even now they've, because what it used to be, I think I bought my stock in 2010, and I think the time before that they sold it was like 1997, I want to say. And it's like they have turned it around a little bit quicker. But again, if you're hurting financially, I don't think the way you do it is every single year raising the ticket prices. You can sell the fucking stupid pieces of paper, find other ways to make money. If you're ever hurting, like, I get it. But like Wildy said this week too, where I think they have like $600 million in the bank or whatever.
The rainy day fund.
Yeah, and maybe that number is off too, but I don't know how much we want to keep talking about this. Todd, you were going to say something?
No, Billy? I'm good.
I was going to say, the last point I'm going to make, and part of the reason I know all this about Bob Harlan is because I literally just got done reading his autobiography. Mm. But in the autobiography, he talked about getting that stock sale done after we won Super Bowl 31. And he talked about how, you know, when he went to the NFL, they were not willing to approve it. And
why
then
did they care?
Because basically it could be seen as, you know, the other owners could look at it as, well, why can't I just do the same thing and sell a piece of paper for $250 and hand it to a fan and give them a, you know, meaningless stake in the team?
I would love to see another
Couldn't
team
they do
try.
That?
So, I would love to see them try.
Couldn't so they do that? Why can't
so
they?
So basically, Bob Harlan had to go to the NFL and show them, look, this is where all the money is going to go. We're going to account for it this way. Not a single penny is going to go to players or whatever. And he had to convince a majority of the owners to vote to allow Green Bay to have that stock sale.
I would still like to see how profitable Titletown is. I don't really care about the other tailgate area they have. They literally built the players' parking lot to take them away from the fans so that they're underground and you don't see them anymore. And then they have the new training facility that they added, but haven't released any videos of what it even looks like, which I would like to see what my wasted $300 went to.
Yeah.
Like, let me see the state-of-the-art shit. The Vikings show off their cool shit. Are they really going to steal shit? It's fucking 2 or 3 years old now. Like, is it really that secretive that you need to keep it away from everyone?
I think those are valid points.
Thank you.
The weight room got an A on the NFLPA.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's pretty good.
Last couple things we'll run through here with the actual team and not Mark Murphy. Boy, was that fun. Doesn't everyone love it? I do wonder. There has to be. Everyone loves it. I won't say anything negative. Okay, so John Eric Sullivan is remaining in Green Bay. Again, this is like a month old news, but I think it's kind of important, kind of funny. The VP of player personnel, Goody's right-hand man, him and I believe Scott Hendrickson or whatever the guy's name is the other top recruit for...
Peterson.
for the Packers, he's still around, but he did have interviews with the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Titans. I thought he was going to go to Tennessee because Brinkert, I believe, who used to work in the Packers front office under Russ Ball and Mark Murphy. He is the Titans president, so I thought maybe he would have brought in a Packer guy. He did not. Good that he's sticking around. The thing, and this is a rhetorical question, what was he doing for the last, like, 6 weeks? You know, like, when you're interviewing for the Titans and the Jaguars, it's like, how hard are you scouting for the Packers? I'm sure most of the work is done, but it's like, does he kind of like lean back and he's like, well, I actually like these players, because it's like, I don't want you to have my entire draft board. You know what I mean? I'm just curious as to what his day-to-day was during the interview process.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I wonder if it's just like, I'm just not going to give you like my real final guys who I really... Well, like, they don't really put the big board together yet, right? That gets finalized like 2 weeks before, right, where they really narrow it down. So maybe it's not really that big of a a deal at that point. Like, if you're early enough, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know. Billy?
I don't know. You're right. Like, if he's interviewing for that position, like, surely they're asking him about his views on personnel and players he likes, and I don't know. But at the same time, it's the same thing as, you know, Ben Johnson going from the Lions and interviewing with the Bears during the playoffs. Like, aren't you supposed to be getting ready for the NFC Championship game, but you're instead getting right. ready for an interview with a division rival? Like,
that's why yeah. they weren't in the big game. That's why.
The big game. Coaching moves, Anthony Campanelli. There's an I at the end of it, but apparently you don't pronounce it. I guess it doesn't matter anymore because he's no longer with the Green Bay Packers. He was our inside linebacker coach. He is now the defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not very surprising. I was worried that this would happen, but like if you told me in the beginning of January that Campanelli was the DC of the Jaguars, I would have told you that Jeff Hafley's probably the head coach. I expected once Jeff Hafley moves that Campanelli would leave with him. They're good buddies, and they'd always been looking forward to working together, which I think is one of the reasons why Sean Duggan is now going to be the inside linebacker coach. He followed Hafley around. He was with him in Boston College. He was with him in Ohio State. He was kind of first reported to be the inside linebacker coach. I think it was just some people who knew Hafley and how he kind of, I don't know, the staff and the guys he respected, they assumed that would be it. And I think they were just more so a little surprised that we were able to land Campanelli as our inside linebacker coach. So it shouldn't be much of a drop off with Sean Duggan. He was in the room last year. Obviously, Cooper had a great year with him in the room. And also, even before he was named the inside linebacker coach, he was the defensive coordinator or linebacker coach at the Shrine Bowl this year. So even as a assistant position coach, he was respected enough to coach in that bowl game. Tom Clements did retire. Sean Mannion replaces him. It is not Connor Lewis, the other whiz kid, quality control guy, numbers guy. I was kind of wondering if that was going to be the case. It wasn't. And then Mason Crosby today retired as a Packer. All-time leading point scorer, I believe, in team history. I think he was just like 10 points or something off, something for being like top 10 in NFL scoring all time. So, I don't know. Nice to see him retire as a Packer. Wonder what 2023 would have been if we had him as a kicker instead of Andres Carlson. I don't think it could have been worse. Maybe he would have missed the kick too. I mean, fucking even our boy McManus missed his 38-yarder in the playoffs this year. But any thoughts on any of those very important topics before we get out of here?
Nice to see Mason go out with the Packers. I mean, obviously we knew it was going to happen. It's just nice. It's cool if they do that.
Favorite Mason Crosby moment?
Everyone has, I think, the Ooh. Same one. Because it's the Cowboys.
Dallas? Okay, that's why I was like, am I thinking of the wrong one? But yeah.
It's that and maybe not a close two, but I'll always remember his first game kicking the game winner against the Eagles. That's when I was really, really, really into the Packers, and that was kind of the start, the rebirth of the Packers being good after a really lousy 2005 season.
The other one I was going to say is the game in San Francisco in 21, I think, where Rodgers had those two strikes to Devontae, and he spiked the ball and he just did that big fist pump because he was like, this is a 56-yard field goal, but I know he's going to drain it. And sure enough, he did. And that's how I felt with Crosby. It was like any time he went out there for a clutch kick, it was like, it's going in. We got it.
Pretty much. Outside of like that 2012 season and then the one season with, God, who was that punter we traded for? Fuck, he was still in the league. J.K. Scott sucked.
Bajorquez?
Yes, Bajorquez. And Wildy brought this up recently, too, how someone told him that he is the worst holder in the NFL, which we were kind of talking about at the time, too, how bad he was. The only other Mason Crosby, maybe this isn't even a memory, and I don't remember how long it was, but the what could have been memory for him is nailing that field goal against the Seahawks in the 2014 NFC Championship game after the Seahawks had already gone ahead, and then we had like 30 seconds left, whatever it was, 50 seconds left, and we had a couple plays, got into field goal range. I think it was a 50-plus yarder, but to nail that in Seattle in the crunchiest of
after
crunchiest
everything
times.
Everything that had gone wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. How about this one? This one isn't really like a moment, but it was, remember the year where we never led against the Lions and we kicked field goals on the last, it's zeros for both games. I mean, that was, I can't
crazy.
Remember what year that was. That was the year that like Matt Patricia was their head
2019.
Coach, right?
That was 2019. Okay. The only other one I would bring up too, God, this is so lame. There's so many different Mason Crosby. But I attribute this more so to Mike McCarthy. But the surprise onside kick, Mason was fucking fantastic at that. That was like my favorite to have.
That's
that.
Right.
McCarthy pulling that out like once or twice a year was one of my favorite characteristics from Mike McCarthy.
Well, and in the Super Bowl.
Us?
Didn't we do surprise onside in the Super Bowl?
No, that was the Saints against
playoff
the Colts.
Game? Oh.
The year before or 2 years before.
I think we did that.
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that.
Well, there is a like a 3.5 minute long only game winning field goals video compilation, if you will, from Mason Crosby. So I feel like that's an accomplishment itself. You can get like a 3.5-4 minute video of just you making game winning kicks. That's pretty good.
I guess maybe we will finish on this then. Something that's been popping up more now on Twitter, and I'm sure all over the place, and we're getting old, but you're seeing more of the Aaron Rodgers highlight videos. Man, every time I see one of those now, it is like, I mean, Jordan Love's pretty good, but you see those clips and it's like, holy fuck, was it just effortless with Rodgers. And it's just 2 minutes straight of perfect bombs, Jordy Nelson sideline throws. It's like, you know, I'm glad he's still in the league, and I'm really I'm glad we had him as long as we did. But sticking with Rodgers here, what do you guys think ends up happening with him in 2025?
I don't know.
Todd, you were looking off. I was calling wherever, but I guess you can continue.
I mean, he's obviously just going to go. I think the teams that are going to want Aaron Rodgers are like, I don't know. I just feel like it's one of those things where if he's going to be late to go somewhere, it's going to be a team that just like needs a guy. Like, does it happen after the draft? Like, feels like it will. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like anybody really wants him.
Agreed. And it feels like if he was going to retire, he would have retired by now. So I think he's going to kind of be left without a team or going to be left with a less than ideal situation. I mean, apparently Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh has loved him for years. So maybe he goes to Pittsburgh, but I don't know that he and Tomlin would get along that well.
I'm obviously an optimist with Rodgers. The Steelers do make the most sense because Wilson and Fields will seemingly be gone, but there's been more smoke with the Giants, which is weird. But
the Giants make no sense.
But they don't have a guy, and that's why I think it makes sense too, is one of the best things Rodgers can do is go to a team knowing that they're going to use a first or second round pick on a quarterback. And then he is, once again, that guy who brings a quarterback along and everyone would be like, oh, this guy, he only cares about himself. But then maybe, like, he knows at some point during the season he's going to get replaced. Again, I have no idea. Maybe he does end up retiring. But I think, I mean, Tennessee would be funny because, again, it's that Brinker guy who worked in the Packers front office, so I don't think he likes Aaron Rodgers. But I would think someone will pay up. It's just, what kind of headache do you want to deal with? And also, what kind of money would Rodgers take to stay in the league as, I don't know, he was okay last year still, but, you know, he's more of a, you know, kind of there to teach someone else while he's with the team.
Well, and that's why I don't know that the Giants make sense. Like, I think Rodgers is expecting he's going to get a bigger payday, and the Giants aren't going to want to pay him a bunch of money, because he's not going to turn the needle and make them a significantly better team. And if you're the Giants and you're that bad, like, why not just go sign Tyrod Taylor and let him start ahead of I'm just saying, let him start ahead of Cam Ward for a year. You finish 2-15 and you have another top 3 draft pick. versus Rodgers, you're going to win six games and you're picking nine.
I think you guys buried the lead on this one. I spoke first, so I buried the lead.
I was excited to remember.
Miami is legalizing ayahuasca. Are we just not going to talk
real?
About that?
Miami is?
I made it up, but wouldn't that be funny? Well, some community or state legalized ayahuasca, he's like, I'll just come. You don't have to pay me.
He could be a trailblazer and play for the Trailblazers, because I know Portland, I believe everything's legal, so he could do ayahuasca, he could do meth, he could do heroin, okay. Who knows? He could do,
yeah, he could branch out, try some new stuff.
But yeah, I don't know. I think the most interesting thing will obviously be where does he end up and what type of money he gets. That's very, because again, he's going to make like fucking $46 million this year, no matter what, because of that money that the Jets owe him. So, because he's still with the Jets technically, right? They still need to release him. It's just that they put out a statement that they're going to move on from him, yeah. Which is a very weird thing.
We don't like Aaron, but yeah. We're not doing anything yet.
Yeah. So we'll see. With that, if you want, leave a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. You can leave a comment on Spotify. That'd be cool. You can leave a review on Apple. Take a screenshot, email it to us at pmppodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Twitter, pmppod, and we'll send you a free koozie. You guys got anything else before we get out of here?
Repost it on X. Send it to all of your family members. And a link, maybe like a Facebook link. Do we put it on Facebook?
We don't.
We'll put it on Facebook. Yeah. I'll put it on Facebook and I'll send you guys a link.
Cool. Yeah. Take us in. That'd be so cool. With that, I don't have anything else. You guys got anything else?
Did you guys watch the combine at all?
No. I watched like 10 minutes and it happened to be when David Spade was in the booth talking, which was kind of funny, and that was about it. Did you?
Yeah, there.
I watched about 10 minutes as well. I did not see David Spade. It was during some of the running back drills.
I saw the big boys run, which is always fun. Also, nobody cares about their 40 times, so it's like, why are they running 40s? We should just not have them do that. But I also saw that, isn't his last name like Dart? He's got hockey hair.
The Jackson quarterback. Dart.
So he's not quite Joe Milton arm, but he's got a nice arm.
I saw a video on Twitter today. You know how there's this new trend over the last year where you do like highlights, but you have the lead in clip being like something very strange, but it somehow makes sense.
Oh yeah. It's like very loosely related to the thing that you want to highlight.
I saw the Jackson Dart one. It was like his ex-girlfriend and it's like a TikTok or something. And she's like, so found out everything was true. He's been cheating on me for the past year and a half.
I saw that one.
And then it cuts right to Jackson Dart highlights, and it's very, very funny. Because he cheated on her
for
a year.
We need Jackson Dart. I wanted Joe Milton last year, but how perfect would Jackson Dart be? The hair, you know, like.
I just said I want somebody with a cannon for an arm.
Yep. Was he from like Ole Miss or something like that?
Yes.
Yep.
Perfect. That's where Brett Favre's basically from, right?
We need to have a quarterback either from Mississippi or one who has not so great relationships with women, and we can do both right there with Jackson Dart, right?
Well, I don't know about the second part.
Okay. All right. You guys got anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
AJ Dillon. God, I'm really hoping you don't re-sign with us, but take us out.
To anybody on Twitter or whatever, you can't do what we're doing. Just enjoy, just watch.
Anywhere I quit my job. Yeah, cause it just won't pay. I worked all year, I worked all month. Then they took my money away.
Todd probably got all of 2.5 inches in the boonies.
I don't. It was just like drip. I can't really tell how much we got, like, because the wind was blowing so hard. We probably got like maybe like three. I don't know. Wasn't that much. It was heavy though.
I had a solid 8. And
what?
with the snowblower, yeah. It was bad.
Yeah, here, especially
8 inches.
Yeah, I got like, we got like 9 or 10 here. It was like the biggest snowfall of the year, I think, in the metro. I had my good workout where I shovel for a good 3 minutes and then I just
take a break,
look at my phone, wave at the cars going by, and I'm like, okay, back to work. Three more shovelfuls.
I felt pathetic getting out of breath pushing that stupid snowblower around. It's like, what is wrong? Am I back out of shape?
Yeah. Well.
Hey guys, Mark Wahlberg here. You've heard me say it before, but I'm going to say it again. You guys have to check out Hallow. This Lent, we are doing something really powerful. It's a 40-day prayer challenge for every day of Lent with Jonathan Rumi, Father Mike Schmitz, and of course, yours truly. We are going through the incredible book, The Way by St. Jose Maria Escriva, and I, along with my buddy Chris Pratt, will lead us through weekly fasting challenges. Join me and millions of others around the world praying every day this Lent. Stay prayed up, and God bless you.
O'Reilly.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly.